Can you explain the current trade corridors with Mexico a little bit further? So perhaps onto US and Canada, of course.
US and Canada, they represent 85% of all of Mexican exports.
Welcome to Trade Finance Talks, your go-to trade, treasury and payments podcast brought to you by TFG. Hello and welcome to Trade Finance Talks. My name is Bhupesh Patel, editor at Trade Finance Global. Mexico's $1.4 trillion economy makes it the second largest market in Latin America, and its geographical location provides it with a prime position for supply chain and trade advantages. And the country has taken advantage of this. In 2022, international trade represented 88% of the Mexican GDP. But the world of international trade is changing. Geopolitical and macroeconomic instability have forced many countries to rethink their trading strategy. Countries are increasingly looking to shift to a nearshoring and de-risking trade strategy, and Mexico might stand to benefit from some of these developments. Though the potential is there, it will still take a collaborative effort from all actors involved to take advantage of the unique position that Mexico finds itself in. To help us talk through Mexico's position in international trade, I'm really happy to introduce Gerardo Gutierrez Olvera Cabrelas at ICC Mexico. Gerardo, welcome to Trade Finance Talks.
Hi, thank you for having me here, Dipesh. I appreciate this opportunity and appreciate the opportunity to talk about what's going on in Mexico regarding trade and investment flow.
Thank you very much. So, quick introduction. Who are you? Where are you from, and what do you do?
I've been doing this for 25 years. I'm originally from Mexico City. 25 years of experience in both local and international banking arena, focused in trade and supply chain finance, export credit and agency, corporate banking and FIs, correspondent banking, global payments and treasury services. Been based in Mexico, supporting Latin America, Asia Pacific and the United States. I'm nowadays executive director and head of trade finance and international business at Banorte, the largest local bank in Mexico and the second largest in the country. A member of the management committee of ICC Mexico and being president of the banking commission of ICC Mexico for the last 5 years.
Very impressive background there. So let's start with some major news that broke recently. Mexico overtook China as the top exporter to the US. What trends led to this, and what does this actually mean for the future of Mexican trade?
It's definitely a trend. If you look back, Mexico is not a new kid on the block in terms of international trade. Let's keep in mind that the ancient free trade agreement, or NAFTA for North America, entered into force more than 30 years ago. And manufacturing products already represent more than 80% of the total Mexican exports. I rather think about these new regionalization trends as nearshoring reloaded or nearshoring 2.0. Regardless of whatever you want to call this, decoupling, de-risking, friendshoring, nearshoring, allyshoring, there's many names for it out there. Certainly in Mexico, we are feeling the sunny side of this major global trade reconfiguration that is already taking place. We see it in different stages or waves. The first stage of investment and preparation for nearshoring is already happening. Some major announcements of investments have been made. Mexico made a record of foreign direct investment last year, much of it coming from the US, much of it obviously destined for sectors and industries that are fully integrated within trade and nearshoring efforts. Some of these announcements of investment will probably take between 3 and 5 years to complete and become a reality in the economy, which will bring in new opportunities. Some other are already visible in some traditional exporting manufacturing industries. We can see it in industrial parks, investment in industrial parks, logistics. Keep in mind that approximately 80%, we share a border of 2,000 miles with the largest market in the world. And 80% of whatever we export to the US and what we are imported is coming on wheels, either railroad or trucks. There is a big investment in terms of logistics in this respect. The industries that are probably feeling it right away are the ones, the traditional exporting sectors that were already selling to North America. They were the first ones that got new purchase orders from the clients in the US trying to de-risk a little bit or diminish its dependence from Chinese suppliers. So some of these exporting companies, they have new working capital requirements in order to be able to comply with that. Some of them are making large investments and require some headroom financially in order to do the CapEx investment that they require to be in place. So we're already feeling it as we're talking.
Thank you very much. Can you explain the current trade corridors with Mexico a little bit further? So perhaps onto US and Canada, of course, but also the hopes for creating new corridors between Mexico and Asia. I think very specifically South Korea and China.
If you put together US and Canada, they represent 85% of all of Mexican exports. It's clearly very North American or US-centric, our exports. In terms of our imports also, more than half of our imports are coming from the North American region. So we're very much an integrated region, the three countries that are part of USMCA. And that is only strengthening and consolidating. There is clearly some extraordinary opportunities to increase this consolidation and to increase this complementarity between the three countries. One of them has to do with the energy sector. The energy sector in North America is a sector where there is an excess of natural gas in the region that can help us have clean, efficient energy if we do the homework. In addition to that, demographic is very relevant. When you look at the OECD data and you look at specifically the way in which Mexico and the US complement each other, we are by far the region that has one of the most, if not the most efficient and a competitive demographic situation in terms of regional blocks in the world. Another important issue here is the rules of the USMCA after 30 years of NAFTA, the rules of USMCA included a more participation of North American components and content in the goods. And that at the end is strengthening this treaty. It's not only in the traditional sectors where we usually were already a relevant supplier, Mexico of North America, but also in some other sectors where it's starting to participate. We see it in electronic components for cars. We see it in obviously automotive appliances and electronics is the biggest chunk of that. But who would have thought that Mexico would be between the three largest suppliers of aerospace equipment? And now we are in the world very well placed to support this. So it's changing the relationship that we have with our commercial partners in North America. At the same time, I would include South Korea and perhaps Japan as part of the, even though they're not near, they're clearly friends and allies of the same bloc. And we're seeing that after North America, the third largest commercial partner of Mexico is now South Korea. Something that was not in the equation for many years is now really changing rapidly. And we have them in the automotive industry, electronics, appliances, handsets, etc., etc. And that is something that is growing rapidly. Same will probably happen with China. China has not traditionally been a relevant investor in Mexico. We are in many ways not complementary, but competitive economies. We both are on the manufacturing side of the equation. Although Mexico is a large country and it can be considered a manufacturing champion, it's less than 1/20th the size of China's manufacturing capabilities. It's something where we have always seen each other more as competitive than complementary, although there are some spaces to complement ourselves. Especially now when you look at manufacturing exports, a big chunk of that is the intermediate goods or the raw materials that are incorporated into a final product that is manufactured are coming from abroad. And a big chunk of that is coming from Asia, aka mainland China. There is a possibility to increase that. We have to be very, I would say, thoughtful how we address this in the future, because there is a growing perception in the US. The dependence from China suppliers have to take into account also Chinese suppliers elsewhere. Chinese investment in Mexico is already being questioned by some partners in the US in terms of that being of Chinese origin, even if it's built in Mexico. So it's something where we have to analyze and keep on the communication with our North American partners to see how to address it.
Hey, enjoying this podcast? Hit that follow button for more. Thank you very much. Fascinating and ever-changing. But I guess with ever-changing trade routes and ever-changing supply chains and new and old trading partner comes the need to finance this trade, right? Potentially with your Banorte hat on. How has trade and supply chain finance adapted in Mexico to this completely changing geopolitical and trade landscape. Perhaps you can also touch on some of the recent fantastic news that's going on the other side of the pond, which is the adoption of electronic trade documents.
Thank you, Dipesh. Definitely, it's a very integrated supply chain and global supply chain. And every single piece of the chain or every single link that is not working adequately has a multiplying effect on the chain. And we saw that during the pandemic. And we have seen it also with all of the geopolitical issues that have been taking place both in Europe and between the US and China, not the two largest economies in the world. Many investors, and I would say many financial partners, are looking at the supply chain in a different way. Clearly, there's been a movement, and we have discussed that many times, from just-in-time delivery, which was the flavor of the last two decades. The relevance of not disrupting a global supply chain, it weighs more and more than it used to do in the past. In the past, there was a joint venture between the US and China that was built for more than two decades, and then all of a sudden this relationship or this joint venture is broken and you have to find new partners to go into that equation, and Mexico is in the right position to do that. What it implies is also at the same time changing and moving. This is happening at the same time when interest rates went up, when inflation has not given away everything that it gained during the last couple of years, where money is not free anymore. The excess of liquidity is only available for projects. So in that sense, many of the companies now have to start thinking about more efficient ways in which to handle working capital trade related. And that implies moving away a little bit. For many years, what happened was there was supply chain financing, leveraging on either the payable side or the receivable side was a trend for many years. Now we're seeing some clients that require to put on some capital, that require to work on the inventory financing. This is something that we have talked a lot during these two couple of days here at the meeting at BAFT, where new technologies will play a huge part on that. In that specific respect, the banks and the fintechs and everyone in the market have to work together with large and small clients to find the way in which we can support them better their working capital. In terms of digitalization, you mentioned something that I think it's a game changer, Dipesh. What was approved in the UK last year in terms of the Documents Act, that is something that is really a game changer, not only because of England, but because of the relevance that the English law has in many other countries. And the way in which it was made, which was taking a standardized approach with the care of being very much aligned to UNCITRAL Melita, no, which is very relevant in terms of being able to replicate this elsewhere in the world. In our specific case, once again, being part of the USMCA and North America, we believe it will have an effect very soon with Canada. And what we're doing in the case of Mexico, if you take into account what happened in the UK, the discussions that are going on in France, and as well as advances in Mexico, we're moving forward. This is relatively new. February 8th, the Mexican Congress has approved legal validity of electronic documents for, it initiated as a project for warehouse receipts. It has included also promissory notes, bills of exchange, and all kinds of titles of documents. It is still pending to be published by the president of Mexico, but it's already on its table and something very promising for these advances.
One final question, because there's been so many big changes in terms of the trade ecosystem, i.e. the trade routes, the trading partners. There has been the development to support the trade and the supply chain finance ecosystem from a financing perspective. And there's also been some progress when it comes to streamlining, making trade faster, cheaper, and easier through trade digitalization. What's your call to action for how we can continue to build a resilient trade ecosystem? So building up the key actors, the buyers, the sellers, the lenders, perhaps the public and private partnerships. How can we continue to drive this forward and create that resilient trade ecosystem in Mexico?
I believe in Mexico, we still have some pending homework, both from the financial side, from the public and private side. Clearly, we have to work together, everyone. private companies, government in all of its levels, federal, state, and municipal, and the financial sector in general, and even the society, education, etc. It's something where we need to work together and take care of the roadblocks we still have. I mentioned more than 80% of our trade flows are moved on wheels. We have to improve our infrastructure in terms of roads, in terms of railroads. In addition to that, 60% of Mexican exports to the U.S. go to three states, Texas, California, and Michigan, which is obviously related to automotive industry. If we are able to develop seaports on the Gulf of Mexico and the South Mexico, we would be able to reach the East Coast of the United States, where we basically do not sell a large amount of products. That would be also a game changer in the case of Mexico. So that would be a resilient trade ecosystem. Rule of law. We already have a very good base, which is USMCA. There is rules in place. Let's make sure that all the players on those rules abide to them and comply them. So I would say probably those clean energy, access to clean energy. We've been talking about ESG issues here in this BAF meeting. At the end of the day, access to clean energy and water is going to be critical, specifically when you're talking about manufacturing industry.
Gerardo, thank you very much for talking to us at Trade Finance Talks here at BAFT Washington DC, the Trade and Payments Conference. I think it's really interesting, advantageous and unique position that Mexico is in, find itself in right now. I think some of the four calls to action here, which is we need more infrastructure development in terms of ports. We need to abide by and ensure the USMCA rules are followed. We need to push digital trade and we need to really drive access to energy, to clean energy and ESG. Gerardo, thank you very much for joining me on Trade Finance Talks.
Thank you, Deepesh, for having me here. It's a pleasure.